Accession number 10421, reel 15.
Mr. Leslie Thornton, reel 15. Before we go on with the description of the voyage, Mr. Thornton, can we just go back to Taulo for a short while? Do you recall having any lectures on embarkation and the country to which your countries to which you were going?
No, we didn't know where we were going, so obviously there was nobody to tell us anything about it. I don't think we've got any. Wasn't time really while we were at Taulo to get any lectures in. We were too busy getting kitted out with our overseas kit.
Did you get any embarkation leave?
Oh yes, we had 2 weeks. I went on embarkation leave a little bit later than the others, and of course I arrived back in Taulo just in time to be told that a telegram had been sent to give me another 3 days. So I just turned about and got the bus back home again.
About what time was this?
This was about 7 o'clock at night when I arrived back at Taulo, and the telegram had been sent that day, but hadn't it arrived after I'd left the house. I could have been on my way back to Taulo when the telegram was given to my wife.
What date was it? Can you recall the date?
No, not exactly, but it was early August. I couldn't remember really the exact date.
What was your family and your wife's reaction to the fact that you were going abroad?
Well, my mother and father, having spent the time in the army, all he said to me was, well, he's going away with a good heart. But my wife wasn't very happy at all, of course, with a baby there 2 months old. She was quite upset about it, knowing I was going abroad and leaving her at home with a small child.
Do you recall if there was any reaction in the village itself to you leaving? Did you have many people turn out to watch you go?
Well, no, because we moved off about 12 midnight to march to the station, so we didn't see many people about at all.
Can we turn back to the voyage? Your last book on the discipline of your body of men on the ship being commended for that. Could you go on from there with the voyage?
Well, I'll go back to the ship. I don't know whether I mentioned it, but it was a liner, a passenger liner that we went on. It was belonged to the Union Castle line, and it was called the Durban Castle, which at one time had carried passengers from London or from England to South Africa. And I was very surprised. I, of course, being a warrant officer, got a cabin. Well, shared a cabin with some other warrant officers, and dined in a second-class dining hall. And it was amazing that leaving England and going on a ship, the difference in the food. We had the food was out of this world, considering there was a war on. Breakfast consists of bacon and eggs, which you didn't see in England then. Wholemeal and white rolls. Now, there's no white bread in England then, but this was baked on the ship. So I only suppose that the flour and that was loaded on the ship in other places, and the variety was like getting your food in a hotel. Of course, at night time you had your lounge to go into, but don't forget there's a war on, and all ships were dry. So the only drink you could get was soft drinks, lemonade, which really was no hardship, because it was like going on at the time it felt as though you were going on a sea cruise.
Did you have any duties on board ship?
Well, no. The duties were done by the seamen. We had some lectures on the ship, of course, to attend. While we're on the ship, we found out that we're going to go to North Africa. And, of course, then the lecture started. And they consisted of lectures on tropical countries, malaria, sunburn, and things like that. Before we landed, we started a course on malaria tablets, which at that time were Mepocrine tablets, which were yellow ones. And we had to take those, I think, for 7 days before we landed, so that it was in the system before we got there. And, of course, we were told that the sunbathing would be controlled, which it is in the army. It starts with half an hour a day and gradually goes on until at last till your body gets completely brown. Then you walk about like that all day. Not in action, of course, but when you're out on rest or things like that. Also, we were told that it was an offence to get sunburnt if it stopped you from doing your duty, and you could be charged with self-inflicted wound, as it may seem. Malaria, you could be charged for getting malaria. Not for getting malaria, but for not taking precautions against getting malaria. Because the tablets were controlled. We were pointed to and said, take one. And if a chap got away without taking these tablets, somehow they could tell. And, of course, he would be charged again.
Did they have any reactions, the tablets?
They did a bit. They used to turn your skin a bit yellow over a prolonged period. That was all. There's no sort of bad effects on your body, except that little bit of colour. It didn't do it everybody, funny enough, but some people it did.
Sorry, you were talking about training.
Yes.
You said you were doing weapon training.
Yes.
Were there any other forms?
Not really. There wasn't the facilities on board the ship, but I must tell you this one on the ship. There were some ex-policemen, civil policemen, who were brought into the army and given warrant officer rank. There was also some civil servants who were drafted in the army with commissions. Now, these people were going to Sicily to police the island. Now, they knew nothing about army procedure at all. And when they got there, they would have soldiers under their jurisdiction. So they have to be taught, while they're on the ship, army procedure. Now, this was done in the form of lectures by officers on their side of the thing. And, of course, then there was the discipline part. And why I was called up to do it, I don't know, whether I was the only sergeant major on board with any knowledge or Infantry One, I'm not sure, it's so long ago. But I was brought in with a major and some chaps that I picked to show these warrant officers and officers the procedure of charging a man. This at the start, of course, right down from the bottom. So I had a corporal and a man there, and I explained that the corporal had ordered the man to do a job. We'll say scrubbing a table, and he said, I want you to scrub that table. Now he went away and he came back and the table wasn't scrubbed, So he said, I thought I told you to scrub that table. And the chap said, well, I was going to scrub it. Now, the corporal was wrong. He should have said, I want you to scrub that table, and I shall be back at 2 o'clock to inspect it. That's what he should have done. Right, we went by that and said that, well, that is what happened. Now he's going to charge the man for not scrubbing the table, because he gave him a correct order. So, straight away, he would go to the sergeant major and say, this man charged, can I have a charge sheet? The sergeant major, if he wasn't busy, say, right, oh, what's he doing? I'll write the charge sheet out. Or he would say to the corporal, right, he's a charge sheet, go and write it out. Now, of course, the charge those days, everything was preceded by whilst in active service, which was more serious than a charge in peacetime. And the charge would be submitted to the sergeant major. Now, there was a big blackboard on the ship in one part of the lounge with a specimen charge sheet all written out for these warrant officers to inspect. So he went, then of course I went through the procedure of the charge of the man being marched in with an escort, marched him in front of the major, reading the charge out and asking the man any reason for it, and then asking him would he accept his punishment. And of course then the punishment came. He would be given some tasks to do on the ship. If in his barracks he would get 3B. But then that charge had to be recorded on a minor offence report, which was inspected every week by the second in command of the battalion. So on the blackboard, another one was a big specimen of a minor offence report, which they could inspect, check it. They also gave him a blank one, the proper form, to keep, so they would know what they were doing. And after that, if the man decided that he would rather go in front of the commanding officer, then that charge would be transferred from the minor offence report onto the guard report, which was kept in the guard room. And if the man was tried by the commanding officer, then the guard report would be produced and the charge would be read from the guard report, and it would be tried by the commanding officer. On another blackboard, there was a specimen charge of a guard report, plus the blank one for everybody to see. Now, I had to go through all that for the civilians, as they were, really. They were nothing about the army. Of course, then I had to explain to them about the punishments, the kind of punishment they could give, as they were allowed to give. The company commander could only give as much as 7 days CB, no more. If he thought the charge deserved more than 7 days, then, of course, he would remand the man for the commanding officer. He could then, if the man was absent, if he goes absent for a day for 6 hours, then he would be able to stop a man's pay for 1 day. If he was absent 1 day and over 6 hours, so he would get 2 days' pay. But it was only so far a company commander could go. Then the other charge, of course, the other punishment was deprivation of pay. Now, there's a difference between a forfeiture of pay and deprivation of pay. Deprivation of pay is when CB couldn't be carried out as a punishment. It wasn't able to be done. So they would say, right, this is where it hurt the man most. He was deprived of 3 days' pay. That meant at the end of the week, half his money would be taken away from him. Of course, then there was the more severe charge. The company commander couldn't give a man detention. He wasn't allowed to. Detention was only given to the commanding officer. And he could give up to 28 days detention. After that, if it was over that, then he had to go to a detention barracks. Those are the little things that I had to explain to the to these people who are going to police Sicily.
Did you travel in convoy, Mr. Thornton?
Oh, yes. Although this was a passenger ship, it was a fast ship, but it didn't go in convoy for a big part of the way. One particular time we started zigzag, and then we knew that submarines were about, and we heard the thumps of the warships dumping the forget what to call them now, depth charges overboard. So we knew there was something was about, and we weren't very very happy about that. Of course, then there was the other part about it, during the day with the sun streaming down, leaning over the side watching the flying fish, which of course none of us had ever seen, and the porpoises leaping out of the water, following the ship, I suppose looking for tidbits, but they followed the ship for miles and miles and miles, and it was a marvellous sight. It, as I say, it was like being on a cruise, except, and there was always that little bit of danger of suddenly finding a shell inside the ship's side. I don't think there's any more incidents really on that particular side, and now we're getting near our destination.
Can I just ask you, was there a general air of excitement on board the ship?
Well, yes, there was. It's a strange thing, but I say I was young, but older than these lads that I had with me, who were only on the 18 part. Matter of fact, I had one lad with me, who was a Lance Corporal, who was only 16. He joined in the Rage, so you can imagine he must have been about 14 or 15 when he joined. But and they were just taking it as an adventure.
How did he get away with it? Did you completely ignore his date of birth because he was such a good young soldier?
Well, it happened a lot in the army. A lot of chaps, even in peacetime, they would say, "Have you got your birth certificate?" I suppose, and say, "No, I haven't got it with me." How old are you? 17 and a half or 18? 18 it was then, and that was it. And of course, pre-war as well, they were so eager to get soldiers into the army that I think little things would pass over. Of course, it was found out sometimes because the parents would write to the CO and say, "Look, my son is underage. I want him out." And of course, there was no other alternative. He had to be sent home.
Right, well, you're coming towards the end of your journey with disembarkation coming up. Mm. Where were you? Where did you go to?
Well, we went to... we left the convoy and shot ahead. And we went to a place called Philippeville, which was on the, of course, naturally, on the coast of North Africa. It was what they call an IRTD, which was an infantry reinforcement training centre, a training depot, and it was tents, of course, most of it. I think there's a few huts there for the permanent staff of the place, but we, of course, would be in tents, and marquees were there for the naffy canteens and things like that. Of course, we got there very hot, dusty by the time we travelled from the ship by truck to this desert. It was all it was, a desert. It was near the sea, of course, another part of the coast. And we just sort of reported, we fell in, given our places where we would sleep, our tents, etc. And then we were told we'd parade the next day, and we would be told what we're going to do.
Can I just ask you, when you landed, were there any civilians about?
Any what?
Were there any civilians about the docks
no,
when you landed?
No, there was no civilians there. Oh, yes, excuse me, there was. There was the odd boy selling his melons and things like that. But there was Philippeville itself, a little town, and we did actually go there. But it was one of these places that you look at and looked really like an Arab quarters, old stone buildings and things like that.
There were no civilian reaction to you going through? You never saw anything?
I couldn't tell you really, because we weren't there very long, and mostly Arabs, and you can't tell what they're thinking.
What impression had you of this new country when you first landed? What was your immediate impression?
Well, hot, sandy, not very good sleeping quarters on the floor, in the sand, mosquito nets, etc. So really it wasn't a very pleasant place to be in. No doubt we'd think later on that we'd rather be there than where we were going, but still, that's beside the point. We did go down to the sea, just over the hill, down below, and there was the blue sea. Now, we weren't warned about anything, about going into the sea at all. So we used to go in, have a swim. And one day, a terrible thing happened. In this camp, there were some guards. I'm talking about Coldstream Grenadier Guards type. And they were, I think, permanent staff. And we went down one day, and we saw these guardsmen swimming in the sea. And gradually, they got further and further and further out, till all we could see was their heads bobbing about a mile away, I should think. And I don't know how many there was, four or five. And those chaps drowned in front of our eyes. Now, I got into the sea, and I felt my feet being dragged side to side. It was an undercurrent. They'd only gone out about 30 yards, and it was so strong, they couldn't swim back. And all we could do was to watch. There was no life belts, there was no boats, nothing. And there was five lads there, just going further away, with no hope of ever getting back. So that finished us with that part of the beach. But you see, we were never warned. I suppose after we went back and reported this, then I should think steps would be taken to make sure nothing like that happened again.
What were the billets like and your sleeping quarters in this depot?
Just eight-man tent. In a row, in rows, the tents in rows. I had a tent with some of my sergeants with me, and all the men were just in the same kind of tents, in rows, and right down below them, of course, was the latrines, which were dug into the sand.
Did you have much problem with flies?
Oh, terrible. The flies are terrible in North Africa. You had a fly sheet over your tent, but still, there was still plenty of flies. And I think they were the main cause of dysentery. Now then, I must mention the dysentery part of it. Really, it was, if it hadn't have been so bad, it was comical. You had to make your way from your tent right down the lines to the end where these latrines were dug. And as you went down, you'd see somebody on the side. And he'd just say, "Couldn't make it, sir." He had to get his trousers down near a bush. And this happened all the time. And it finished up in the end. They were carrying them off the toilet. Been on probably 4 hours, sitting 4 hours with dysentery. Fortunately, I didn't get it. But I got a little bit of the runs, as you might say. but not. I didn't get dysentery, but it was really bad. First time abroad, these young lads, you see, flies, nowhere really to take precautions. Well, you couldn't. I suppose if flies got on your food in the dining hall, which are only under canvas, then something would happen. So that was a very bad. Eventually, the medical officer came round, of course, and taken to hospital or cured on in the medical room. But it was really really serious at the time.
What was the food situation? What was the food like?
Not very good. I can't. It was all done in the makeshift kitchen, you know, and a lot of it was dehydrated. It was, well, you wouldn't, when you think about the ship and what you had on the ship, and then going back to that, coming to what we're eating there, mince and cabbage that looked like, we used to call it gas cape, because it was, that's what it was like, a lump of gas cape cut in pieces, and it was tough. So all I can say about the food, it was rotten.
What about water? Was it plentiful?
Oh yes, got plenty of water, standpipes. Of course, you always had your tablets to put in to purify it.
You never discovered where it was drawn from?
No, not really. No.
Health and sanitation latrines. You say were some distance from the tents.
Yes.
Washing and shaving. Was that a problem at all?
Just outside, on a just a row of wooden frames with a tap coming from the ground.
Were there any other pests that you had to put up with other than flies?
Snakes. The odd snakes are abound. Beetles, scorpions. One day I went to look at the notice board, and there was a scorpion stuck on with a drawing pin. Somebody had. Somebody had a joke with it, and killed it, of course, and stuck it on the notice board with the drawing pin. They were nasty things if they stung you. Unfortunately, I didn't hear of anybody getting bitten with a scorpion. We did have not a blizzard. Couldn't have a blizzard. A very bad wind when we were there.
Storm, sandstorm.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
I was in the sergeant's tent, actually, the mess, in the big marquee, this night. And suddenly we heard a noise, like a woo, just like that. And we thought, what the devil was that? And, of course, everybody said, right, get all of the tent poles. This was the side ones, the little poles that went round, kept your flaps down, the marquee posts. And everybody dashed to hold the tent down, everybody, and they held the wrong side. And the wind came the other side, and off the tent went. It wasn't only that went, all our tents went as well, and then started to rain. That put the tin hat on it. All our kit was swept down to the sea, well, down to that way. And we found them the next morning, all in a great river of water. We had to go and pick them all out and find our kit. So that wasn't a very pleasant thing. That night we all slept in the dining hall on tables.